And this text was composed by the master Tisha, who traveled to Tibet and composed this text in Tibet. Generally speaking, we actually cannot see our own face. To see our own face, we require a mirror to look at, and then we can see our own face. So usually we can see others, and we can point at others, and, oh, maybe there's something wrong there, and there's something wrong over there. But if we don't have a mirror, we cannot see what's wrong with ourselves. If we look in a mirror, we can then see, oh, actually maybe I also need to have a wash. So that function that is fulfilled by a mirror is similar to what is meant here in this title, by a lamp for the path to enlightenment. Because it's through having a lamp that a path can be illuminated, and one can see which would be a better way to travel and which way would be better to avoid.
This
lamp for the path to enlightenment, this serves in the way that in the previous illustration we spoke about a mirror. So here this text serves as a lamp to illuminate for us in terms of what obscures us, or what remains unknown at this moment. So for example, in terms of how to achieve a good rebirth in future lives, the causes that need to be accumulated for that is something that remains unknown to us. Similarly, in terms of liberation, so we may have heard this term, but do we understand what liberation is, as well as how to achieve it, the method or the technique to achieve it? Well, this text makes that clear, how to achieve liberation and what liberation is. And then thirdly, in terms of enlightenment, and that's another term we've heard, And so what is enlightenment? How to achieve enlightenment? So the not knowing that, or what we don't know in terms of what enlightenment is and how to achieve it, this text clears it up. And so in terms of enlightenment, we've heard previously that there are the three types: the enlightenment for the being of the hero lineage, the enlightenment of the being of the solitary realizer lineage, and the enlightenment of the bodhisattva. So this text clearly shows the method for achieving all three of these enlightenments. That was, in brief, the meaning of the title here. So we spoke about enlightenment and what the purpose of the term lamp is in the context of the title. So we're going to start then, of course, today with this text and work our way through this text. And just hearing these verses here, these verses which are actually very clear, there's a tremendous merit will be accumulated just from listening to these words, let alone practicing what is presented here, or let alone meditating on what's presented here. So we should now, before we actually start on the text, just take a moment to reflect on this very rare and precious opportunity that we all have to hear this text, Lamp for the Path on Enlightenment, and not only to hear it, but also to have the opportunity to reflect on the meaning of the text and to meditate on the text. And in amongst all beings, there are so very few who will ever get to hear just the name of this text, let alone to have a presentation on the entire text. And amongst those who get have the opportunity to hear this text, very few will have the inclination or the opportunity to actually contemplate the meaning of this text. So this is something we should really rejoice in this opportunity we have. And if we think of the number of years that we may have in our lifetime, and then we break that down to the number of days within a single year, this is actually a small period of time we are dedicating to this, the study and the contemplation of this text. But the fact that we are doing this is something very rare and very unique in the world. And so we should generate great delight in our minds about this. And in fact, that I'm having this opportunity to explain this to you is something that I'm particularly pleased about, because this is also for me a rare opportunity to have been able now to read and contemplate the meaning of this text and to share that with others. So I'm particularly pleased about having this opportunity. So for that, I want to say thank you. And I assure you that I've generated an altruistic motivation, a motivation to be of benefit to all sentient beings. And with this motivation, I'm going to present this text. And then for yourselves, that I request that you listen with a similar motivation. You listen, first of all, listen with an attitude to apply the meaning of this text to oneself, to see this as something personal, as a description relates to each person individually, and then moreover, to listen with a motivation to be of benefit to others. This text by Lama Atisha is an abbreviated presentation of all the sutras and tantras of the Buddha. So what we have here is the essence of the Buddha's teachings presented. Because one can come to study the Buddha's teachings through a great number of sutras and their commentaries and tantras and their commentaries. But what we have here is an abbreviated presentation of the essence of the meaning of the Buddha's sutras and tantras. And not only is this Lamrim text, this text, the essence of the Buddha's teachings, it is also the foundation of the entire Lamrim lineage within Tibetan Buddhism. So with this text as the basis, great texts such as the Lamrim Chemul by Lama Tsongkhapa, the great Lamrim by Lama Tsongkhapa, this was composed, as well as all other Lamrim texts, they stemmed from this text, this root text. So the text always starts off with the name in Sanskrit and then in Tibetan. So the name in Sanskrit is Bodhipatna Pratipam. And in Tibet, it's John Chupalamdron.
And the thing that the George Gimare called Lotawa Digi, so and Lotawa Gi and the Chanju Lamu Tema, the Bugge to Kuyondu, and the Dambo Jarakialan, the Lagores, the Bugge in Lagores, the Lotawa Gi is from your.
And so the this line, which has the title in Sanskrit and Tibetan, was written actually by the translator who translated this text from Sanskrit into Tibetan. Then the actual text starts with the homage to the Bodhisattva, the youthful Manjushri. So this is now where the text starts with, the text composed by Lama Atisha, it starts with this line.
Then din sosu le sunam chimbo sai go re sunam chimbo ga de sosu sunam chimbo ge wa ya ko sa ba yin en chimbo cha ba ne yin gi ne di cha wa de lam ya bu yong wa da di che wa yong go re din da da jin me shun de ge ba la cha sa lo cha se go jin zhen de
The reason we always see at the start of a text a homage like this is because masters, before they engage in any kind of virtuous activity, they will offer homage. And the reason they offer homage is twofold. So on the one hand, it's to eliminate obstacles to the successful completion of their endeavor, and then going along with this, is to accumulate virtue, again, for the successful completion of their endeavor. And so this is why we'll see before all texts, all treaties and the like, a homage of sorts. And so therefore, through the elimination of obstacles and accumulation of virtue, the task that the master is setting himself, in this case, composition of a text, is going to turn out well. Because the more merit that one has, the more successful one's activities will be. Therefore, a text always starts with a homage. And so this practice that is done by the great masters is something that we too should emulate. So before we engage in a virtuous activity of any kind, we should also offer prostration or show homage or pay homage to the Buddha, to the Three Jewels, to our teachers and the like. And we do it with a similar understanding that for our virtuous activity to be as successful as possible, we need to accumulate virtue and eliminate obstacles. And therefore, whatever virtuous activity we engage in, we should start off with paying homage. So starting out the first verse, I can read the first two lines, the first three lines. I pay homage with great respect to the conquerors of the three times, to their teaching and to those who aspire to virtue. So here, prostration is offered to the Buddhas of the three times. So those beings who have already become Buddhas, those who are becoming Buddhas, and those who will still, who are to become enlightened. So here homage is offered to all of them. And so that's the meaning of the three times, or the conquerors of the three times. Then great respect. So here homage is to be offered with one's body, with one's speech, and with one's mind. And this is how one would do it, with great respect. So in terms of the mental part of that, so with one's mind, then here one is offering homage with an understanding that it's only through the implementing the Buddhist path or practicing the Buddhist teachings that one is able to overcome all obstacles and accumulate all good qualities so as to achieve one's goal. So this is going to be so if one has that understanding and that understanding in a heartfelt manner, then one will be going for refuge mentally with great respect, because one will understand that through practicing the teachings of the Buddha, one will achieve one's goal, and the goal is the complete elimination of all faults and the accumulation of all good qualities. So that's the mental aspect of great respect, or going for refuge with great respect, and offering homage, sorry, with great respect. Then the verbal aspect would be repeating a refuge prayer, for example, such as I go for refuge to the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, etc. So the normal refuge prayer that we start with. The I go for refuge until I'm enlightened, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly, etc. So that's the same refuge prayer we always start with, or a similar one. And so that would be how we go for refuge with great respect, verbally. And then in terms of the physical offering of homage, then one could either do prostrations or join the palm of one's hands together in the refuge mudra. So that is how one could go for pay homage with great respect to the conquerors of the three times. And then in terms of the those who aspire to virtue, this refers then to all Arya beings, so all beings who have a direct realization of emptiness. So that is the same then as the Sangha jewel. So we've now had the Buddha jewel, the conquerors, and those who aspire to virtue, this being the Sangha jewel, and to their teaching. So this then is the Dharma jewel. And then the Dharma jewel specifically refers to the true cessations in the mind of all Arya beings. So that is what the Dharma jewel is. It's the actual realizations that are true cessations in the continuum of all Arya beings, so all beings who have a direct realization of emptiness.
Then
the next three lines of this first verse shows why Lama Atisha here is offering homage. So Lama Atisha was requested by the good disciple, Chonchubo, to present a text or to compose a text that presented the entire path to enlightenment, but in a way that is condensed. So not an expansive text, but a condensed text. And so Chonchubo, who requested this text, he is a student of great faith and great devotion in the Dharma, but doesn't have great knowledge or great understanding in terms of how to practice and achieve the goals of the Dharma. So with due to this request that Lama Atisha accepted, he now offers homage so as to accumulate virtue and to eliminate obstacles so as to compose this the kind of text that the disciple Chonchubo requested. And he requested again a text that shows the entire path to enlightenment but in a condensed form. So furthermore, in the sutras and tantras, there's an expansive explanation in terms of the method to achieve good rebirths in future lives, as well as the methods required that one needs to practice in order to achieve liberation from cyclic existence, as well as in the sutras and tantras, extensive explanation on the method for the attainment of enlightenment. So Lama Atisha here is making the commitment to base his text on these extensive explanations, but to write his text in a condensed manner, in a brief manner, for those who do not have the opportunity to study in great detail. Then the first two lines of the second verse understand that there are three kinds of persons because of their small, middling, and supreme capacities. So here Lama Atisha is saying that he's going to write this text in accordance with each of these three types of capacities. So what this means is that some people's way of thinking is not so powerful, not so broad. Others, they have a broader mind and a more powerful mind. And then there are those who have a supreme mind, a mind that is not narrow at all and is very powerful. So Lama Tisha is going to write this text in accordance with these different ways of thinking. So in other words, he'll write this text in accordance with those who think in quite a small or narrow way, or those who have a capacity that is broader than that. And he'll also write in accordance for those students who have the broadest, the supremest way of thinking. Then ich konnte keinen Kü Song Song den Kü der Karriere die Legende ja meine also sind
Legende nein Legende also Kü Kü Leute Kassel und mein Mann Kü Chenbo der Kassel Kü die nicht Bank und Kala sein meine Jahre Kü Chenchen sind die Rua Kü Benjur Mann Boye Kü Benjur Kassel und mein Mann Boye Schuhe Kü Chenbo der Leute Rua Kassel meine Kü ne sein meine mit Kü Ohr Bank oder Leute Rua also Kassel Kü Chenbo ja na mit
And just so that we're very clear, the capacity here and the small, middling, and supreme, this doesn't refer to a person's body size. So Lama Atisha is not talking about his writing and text for those who are particularly short, those who are particularly tall, and those in between. Nor is he is he saying that this refers to those who are not very wealthy, those who are supremely wealthy, and those who are somewhere in between. Rather, this is specifically about a way of thinking. So those who are more narrow-minded, as opposed to those who are particularly broad-minded and with a powerful mind, and then those in between. The next two lines here, then this shows the last two lines in the second verse shows that Lama Tisha is furthermore is committing to writing according to the individual, or he will explain the individual characteristics of the beings of the three capacities, as well as making very clear the differences between these three types of practitioner. We'll have the question. So let's hear about the person of small capacity. What kind of characteristics would they have?
Kanshi tabni kanda ki korwe dewa tamdala rangye dundu nyerjeba dine kibu tamarashiyas. Ta ne cikti dire.
And so this then is explained in the third verse.
Ta gara sungura sene kanshi tabni kanda ki korwe dewa tamdala. Sito ta nangzu ku ta korwe dewa tamla jik dundu nyer, korwe dewa tamla. Ta nangzu korwe dewa sito yun.
So
다 가르 삼라 가르당 고르서나 탑시데 다 녀와 나송라 께바는 둔로다 데네 나송 께바는 다 진 칼라사야 다 강아 디니기 네 나자다 강아 베 나송 나송 께바는 베네 수볼라 마다 나세주나 아니 맨주시야 다 코로나 탑라 다 고 신고 말와다 능고 나세주나 나세디 부스네 쿰데야 마다 제메레 다 디니기 차바 디니기 차베 둥어 주나 차바이네 다지게 두로 나 미는 가서 두로 다니는 터시에도 걸려야까 그 터시 지는 지 신규어 말에 제야요 말에 제사 되니게 아니 누가 아니 가서 누가 되니 내가 성을 빼네 샘제 야다 되니게 주의당 가래 나 미기 곧 자야다 되니게 비셔다 되니 강아 지 강아 빼네 냐지를 마선나 냐로 지기는 콜로 자 자로 지다 빼네 미 미어레 냐코노도 나노 여레 주비어레 백바게 지그레 나고 냐치보 냐치글 콜 트라스트겐 잘 마선 망무 휴지에 들어와다 데니기 다 든루 데니지나 다 든루 개바나 강아 데니스 두다 덴데 든루 마케와 타고도 개와 치마다 다 나다 미 고마로 토와 있네다 데니 강아 디수 든루 나신 강아도 녀야 믿었어 제가 하다 미디와 나가서네 내나서 용변에 아니면 주제야 탑라 여바나 차와 있는 두로군 타야바다 근데 네게 소소 탑 탑시 따야도 제가 준주어 나서는 제와래 제와래 다 사다 미고 와 토바는 배면서 약보를 했지 배 예치 못 아침 못 했지 제가 네네 자다 제와치마 사다 미고 와 토구도 선비 니마 토네 탑 미누어 심베다 제담 돈느냐 타바다 탐지 김에서 마다와지 제와치마 나서는 두어래 타구도 세비 나서는 두어 타구도 근데 타나 가르고선 사다 미고 와 토구도 사다 미 제와 렘바이나 나 나서 두어래 타구도 오세비 다 사다 미고 와 담 돈느냐 다들 하다 미고 와서 돈느냐 와서 니 토비게 탑람 될아야 아니 다 엘리다 담보디제 하다 미가 담 돈느냐 와제 삼로 디 다하디다 삼로 제충 세데지레 삼 제충 다다 삼나 디제
So seeing here, so the person of small capacity, they are still thinking very much about the pleasures of cyclic existence. So here the pleasures of cyclic existence refer to the wish for physical comfort and mental happiness, so both the physical and the mental side. So this, they are enjoying samsara, and their mind is quite dominated by this wish for happiness, the happiness that is to be found within samsara. However, what they are seeking to avoid is they have been contemplating on the situation of the lower realms, and they've seen how in the lower realms that wherever one is born, whether it is as an animal or a hell being or as a preta, then one experiences tremendous suffering, and not only does one experience tremendous suffering, but one doesn't have the intelligence and the capacity to alleviate that suffering even on a coarse level. And this we can see, for example, if an animal is suffering from the elements, there's very little they can do. If it's raining, they can maybe go under a tree, or if the weather's very cold, they can huddle together. But beyond that, there's not much that they can do. They don't have the mental or physical capacity, for example, to make clothing like humans can do. And furthermore, in the context of animals, they suffer not only from being mentally impaired, but they are also abused by other beings, in particular by human beings. So animals are made to work for human beings. And then furthermore, they suffer constantly from the fear not only of being killed by others, but by being eaten alive. And this is a fear that is constant for animals. And if you think about the situation of, for example, just a fish, wherever a fish is in the ocean, so the ocean is its home, but it's not a place of safety. Even within the ocean, it is surrounded by the possibility of other fish that want to catch it and eat it alive, as well as, of course, human beings trying to catch the fish and kill it and eat it. So animals, all animals, suffer from this, suffer in this way. One of our being mentally impaired and not being able to resolve their situation, and then secondly being enslaved or taken advantage of, enslaved by others, and then that this constant fear of being caught and eaten alive by others. So that's just an example of the suffering of animals, and the sufferings of the lower realms are so much broader than just that. So here, this practitioner has contemplated the sufferings within the lower realms and come to see that such a rebirth is certainly likely, or at least possible, and generating great fear for such a rebirth. They have a strong wish not to be reborn in the lower realms, but to rather attain rebirth in a state similar to what they have now, or even better, of course. So here the wish would be for a rebirth as a human or as a god. So they have no thought about liberation from samsara or the attainment of enlightenment or full enlightenment. Rather, they have this mind that is striving to be free from the possibility of rebirth in the lower realms. And the other part of thinking here is they're striving not only to be free of rebirth in the lower realms, but to attain the rebirth of a human or a god.
This is what the top gosh in your digit sick darada top canetically congurella the negit and delia Montague Garchigora Senna. The negit Yawa Chimang also a tiny that had a muco and toya dundala, said Tigita, Luma is me to Jimson Borwa, Jimson Yata. The net and a conjusum there, Jeffso Toyata, Jamro Chiata, the negit and the lake in the swan, so lake in the swan.
Looking at the first line, so here it says whatever means. So here we can, let's talk a little bit, use this term means to talk about the method that a being of the small capacity engages in. So there are a number of practices that such a person would engage in, such as going for heartfelt refuge to the three jewels out of fear of being potentially reborn in the lower realms. But amongst the practices the being of small capacity engages in, they primarily engage in the practice of thinking about causality or the law of cause and effect. And this is because their primary practice is to guard their ethical conduct, and their ethical conduct in terms of their body, speech, and mind, and the accumulation of virtue with their goal of a good rebirth in mind. So therefore, this practice of causality, of thinking about causality, is their main focus, because this will include on the one side, the refraining from engaging in non-virtue, as well as the engaging in virtue. So both of these will be included within this practice of thinking about cause and effect, the law of karma, and it's done with this motivation to ensure that in their next rebirth they attain a good rebirth, a rebirth as either human or God. So this way of thinking is a person who thinks in this way is called a person of small capacity. So again, this is what we saw above in the second verse. A person of small capacity refers to this way of thinking. or a person who thinks in this way, rather. One thing you have to be clear of is that understanding, now coming to understand the way of thinking of a being of small capacity, this doesn't mean that all beings are included within this, because or within the capacity of small, middling or supreme beings. In fact, there are the vast number of beings actually are not included within any of these three. So let's not even talk about those who are in the lower realms, such as animals, predators, and hell beings, because they, of course, are not included in this. But let's talk then about humans. So amongst humans, the vast majority will not accept presentations such as rebirth or reincarnation. They will not accept the law of cause and effect and the like. So if one doesn't accept karma and reincarnation, then one's not going to go for heartfelt refuge. One is not going to be thinking about karma, because one doesn't believe in these things. So such beings, whether they are humans or gods, they are beings, but they are ordinary beings. They're not beings of small or middling or great capacity. They're not even yet at that level, because they have their way of thinking isn't yet broad enough to be called a being of the small capacity. So they would rather be referred to as ordinary beings. Now thinking of the Lamrim context, or the Lamrim texts. So when we hear in the context of the Lamrim about the practices of a being of small capacity, then it includes a number of topics. So we'll first have a precious human rebirth. So here, thinking about the rarity of a precious human rebirth and its great value, and how difficult it is to attain. And then there'll also be that. So there'll be one practice. Another practice will be that of the impermanence of life. So the meditations that are related to that. Then the meditations in terms of the sufferings of the various lower realms. And then fourthly, the practice of refuge. This is also included within the being of small capacity. And then fifthly will be the practice of causality, in particular the abandonment of non-virtue. So these are the practices that are included within the being of smallest capacity. So just to mention again briefly, so the meditation on precious human rebirth, such as its rarity, its value, and then also impermanence, being the second impermanence of life. And thirdly, lower realms. Fourthly, or the suffering of lower realms. Fourthly, refuge. And fifthly, the abandonment of non-virtue through meditating on karma.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've spoken about the way of thinking or how a person of small capacity thinks. So now we come to the next part, which will look at the being of middling capacity, so their way of thinking.
So,
can I read the whole of the fourth verse?
Ta garo sungor sena disungor da. Ta deji ngandu ge da jewa chima ngason da tin thaba tam sa de thaba tam la da mi go fa tam sam sam da ro. Ta de o dile ji mi du sta. Si da da thaba mi go wa thom ne ngason ge dunga le de thai go de ne thaba mi go wa thone la la dunga tu mi le dunga tu. Si da ngandu ge thaba mi ga ne ske be ne da dunga nyong go ya nyong go da ma nyu da ดุงโดดาเดนิเดมาญูมาดาเดนิเกดุงหยงโกดะชะซาดุงหะเดเลเตคัมซุมเปเนลาเลจิดางะจุเกคัมซุมซีเดดาเดบาดาซูดาซุมเมคัมกาวาเจเวเนเลดาญุมมองเกเจวาชินเจละดุงหะเลทาเมนดูชะซาดาดิงดุงหะเดละทาโกดูซัมเปเกซัมโลดาเจเดชิซัมโลดิละแกเชเลโกดาเดชิซัมโลดิละทามีโกวาทัมนาตัมมาเดยอมมาระวาดาดาติซัมโลกาเรแกเชเลโกซ
So what is the way of thinking that is characterized by a being of middling capacity? So, like a being of small capacity, they see the tremendous suffering of a rebirth within the lower realms and will be desperate to avoid such a rebirth. However, their way of thinking is significantly broader than a being of small capacity, in that they go beyond that and see that actually rebirth as a human or as a god. This, whilst better than a lower realm rebirth, this in itself is a rebirth that is pervaded by suffering. And they see that amongst the various different kinds of rebirths one can have as a human being or as a god, whichever one has, so in other words, wherever one is born within the three realms, the formless realm, the form realm, or the desire realm, wherever one is born, one experiences suffering upon suffering upon suffering. And this is because one is continuously harmed by the afflictions. And there is no method to be free of the harm that comes from afflictions if one is taking uncontrolled rebirth within samsara. So this is what characterizes this broader way of thinking of the being of middling capacity. Because unlike the being of small capacity, they see that wherever one is born within samsara, including the happy migrations of a human or a god, one is still pervaded by suffering. And therefore, one needs to abandon all such rebirths within samsara. Being who has come to see that wherever one is born within samsara, that a rebirth, such a rebirth is a rebirth pervaded by suffering, such a person then will investigate and seek out what the cause of the suffering is, because it's through knowing what the cause is, then they can, if they need to, then try and eliminate that cause. So here they will see that the cause of all suffering that is experienced by any being, whether it's in the lower realms or human being or even gods, all suffering that is experienced comes from the afflictions. So the afflictions are the root cause of all suffering, or the cause of all suffering. And here when you say suffering, it's got a very broad meaning, from dissatisfaction, so from what we would consider maybe less obvious, to the most obvious forms of suffering. All of this comes from the cause of the afflictions. So seeing that this is the cause, they know that this cause of the afflictions, the cause of all our suffering, the afflictions, this is what needs to be abandoned. So such a person now will come to see that this cause of all their dissatisfaction and suffering that they experience in this uncontrolled manner, wherever they are born in samsara, that this is the afflictions. And if the afflictions and are abandoned, then no further contaminated karma will be accumulated. And if they are their afflictions have been abandoned, then they have attained a state of liberation. So this means that they have come to understand that if they have completely cut the root of their afflictions, then in their continuum they will have attained the state of liberation. So they will therefore be liberated from cyclic existence. Or to be more specific, through cutting the root of the afflictions completely, they will be liberated from uncontrolled rebirth in cyclic existence. And it's the uncontrolled rebirth that they've been liberated from is this uncontrolled rebirth that is caused by contaminated karma and afflictions. But by having abandoned the root of the afflictions, severed this root of the afflictions, they have therefore become liberated. They obtained this mental state of liberation. Another way then of putting this mental state of liberation is they have attained a true cessation. And this particular true cessation will be the true cessation that is the state that is liberated from uncontrolled rebirth in cyclic existence. So to achieve this, so this is their goal, and they've understand this goal through having come to understand the cause. Now, how do they achieve this goal? In this, they need to engage in a method. They need to engage in a technique. And this is meditation based on with a number of objects, as well as, when they're not meditating, engaging in accumulation of virtue. So when they're engaging in accumulation of virtue, it will be practices such as generosity, ethical conduct, patience, joyous perseverance, etc. And in meditation, they will have objects of meditation such as those for the development of calm abiding, objects of meditations relating to impermanence, and those of selflessness. So in meditation, they'll be meditating first. They'll be meditating to develop calm abiding, and they'll also be meditating on impermanence and selflessness. These are the main meditation practices of such a practitioner. And then in between sessions, they will be accumulating virtue through acts such as generosity and the like. So such a person, they have a far broader way of thinking than the being of small capacity. And this person then is called the being of middling capacity. A middling because of their broader way of thinking.
Some of the Dana, the Nijila Kiwu Tila, the Nijila Kiwu Tila, Dene demba shi ta dene ki dunga sene dunga demba kunju demba kote lamde se demba shi kore she ya ta dene ki nyamlin che ta di ya dene shi de lamrim che ma na la di kote la dene ki shi yungo ta di kyo kya chi mo
gosong dene kore nyepa di gosong dene demba shi gosong demba shi sape che la
demba shi sape che la di gaz dene ki nyamlin che hen dene ki kya che sungo ro kya che sungo ro
wane
Tadi di nalu tu esma demi dua, mewah tu tadi di dunda di lembrim nalama, mana ngasuh di dunga samba sir, dunga samba dalah, kowe dunga samba sir, kowe ji dunga samba dah, kowe cerai di dunga samba sir ada, dene tablam tempe sih kor ni susah ada, ni sini tu tak ada, ni dah mewah komda di cahsan di sih kor, wah cahsan di kacim bosih kor.
And in terms of the lembrim. A person of middling capacity, when we hear the term person of middling capacity in the context of the lamrim, we should immediately call to mind what is included within that, or what chapters of the lamrim are included within the being of middling capacity. So such a, within the lamrim, the presentation on the faults of cyclic existence, this is included within the being of middling capacity. So here we will look at the presentation of suffering according to the three-way presentation, such as the suffering of change, and the all-pervasive suffering of conditioning. Then there's a presentation of the six ways of suffering, a sixfold presentation on suffering, or then eightfold presentation on suffering. So this is all included within the presentation on the faults of samsara. And this presentation will include the suffering of not just the low realms, but also that of the happier migrations. And furthermore, within the lamrim, the presentation on the Four Noble Truths, this is included in the being of middling capacity. So the noble truths of suffering, the origin of suffering, cessation and path, those four noble truths are included within the presentation of the being of middling capacity. And then these topics are what will be practiced by a being of middling capacity. So here we can see that to engage in the practice of these kinds of topics, they need a mind that's much broader and more powerful than a being of small capacity.
Tangan tu, jiwu cungu je, jiwu ding je, sam di je, sesa, tak wang sih tu masa ni, ngan tu lakwa yudikan sorci, lewa. Tapi jiwa cima, ngan tu dah mili kovan, sam tuh kudu sembel, lada mili kovan, lada mili jiwa leh di, dah tak ngan tu lakwa yudikan le. Tapi jiwa leh itu, dah langan tu, yu, yu, dah tengah tu ke sabai na, jiwa cima lada mili kovan tuh tu boleh. Dah masa sabai na, tuh tu ya mal le, lewa. Di nasi.
In terms of ourselves as individuals, whether we are included or will be included amongst beings of small capacity or middling capacity, this is really up to us. Because what we've seen here is what classifies someone as a being of an ordinary being or a being of small capacity or middling capacity is a way of thinking. So a way of thinking is something that we have within our hands. We ourselves have attained the causes have this human rebirth. So we've accumulated in the past the causes that have ripened in this rebirth. Now how we use this rebirth is completely up to us. So if we use this opportunity that we have to think about the tremendous suffering that is experienced by each and every sentient being in the lower realms, and how due to us have accumulating the causes in the past to be reborn there, we may very well be born there in our next life. The thinking in this way and generating a strong determination to guard and protect ourselves from such a rebirth, we will generate this mind of the being of small capacity. So that's up to us to generate such a mind. And then similarly, if you're thinking about how wherever one is born in samsara, that one has no peace at all, not even a moment's peace. And this is because we are dominated by the afflictive minds and the results that have come from the contaminated karma that we have accumulated in the past. And then, if we think about this to a profound level, we'll give rise to the wish to be free from rebirth in samsara in its entirety. And if we think about this repeatedly, then this wish to attain liberation from uncontrolled rebirth in samsara, this will come about more frequently and with less and less effort. And then eventually we'll come to the stage where we too could be included amongst the beings of middling capacity. So to achieve either of these states of mind, the state of mind of a being of small capacity or of middling capacity, is entirely dependent on us and the continuous effort that we put into developing these minds within us. And then similarly, the attainment of the goals of the being of small capacity and the being of middling capacity, that too is dependent on ourselves and ourselves putting the consistent effort into the required meditations and the accumulation of virtue when not in meditation.
Dinade
About the presentation, we've heard about the way of thinking of a being of small capacity and middling capacity. One more thing to say on this is that we shouldn't see these as, whilst we are talking about two different types of beings, we shouldn't see their way of thinking as being separate. Rather, the being of middling capacity, their path is in accordance or in harmony with or includes the being of small capacity. Their objects of meditation have a relationship. These are not completely separate. So what this means is a person who's cultivating the minds of a being of middling capacity, who's trying to generate within themselves the understanding that wherever one is born within samsara, one experiences suffering, and the cause of the suffering is these afflictions and the contaminated karma that the afflictions have led to the accumulation of. And therefore, liberation from this uncontrolled rebirth in samsara is what I desperately need. So a person cultivating such thinking should have already done the cultivation of the being of the small capacity. So when they're thinking about the sufferings of samsara, they don't need to make any effort to think about the sufferings of the lower realms. A revulsion, a powerful fear of rebirth in the lower realms should naturally arise in them because they've already done this, these meditations and been successful in these meditations. So this shows the relationship between the practices of the being of the middle capacity with that of the being of small capacity. So being striving for the goal of the middle capacity being, the goal of liberation from samsara, their practices include that of the being of small capacity and would have already been done. Their way of thinking is now different. Their goal is different, but they will have included those practices. And so here we can see again a similarity in terms of the practice of the law of causality. Because we heard earlier that the being of small capacity, their main practice is avoiding non-virtue and accumulating virtues, this practice of karma. And so the being of middling capacity will also do this. They will be striving to avoid all the accumulation of any non-virtue, no matter how slight, because they don't want obstacles to the attainment of their goal. Furthermore, they will be accumulating virtue so as to achieve their goal. So they will also be protecting their ethical conduct and engaging in acts of virtue and the like. So here again we see that the practices of the being of middling capacity are in harmony or in accordance with the being of small capacity. And we've heard just a moment ago how whether we become a person of small or middling capacity, this is up to us. And it's up to us coming to understand our situation, understanding the goals that we can achieve and what that they mean, and then the method. And then coming to understand this, applying ourselves in this method. So this is up to us, and if we do this and we do this well, we will be included amongst the beings of small capacity or the beings of middling capacity. And now, we have all come together for this period of time. We've come together and we have the opportunity to hear a presentation on the path. We have an opportunity to engage in meditation on the path. And this means we have the opportunity right now to come to understand what is our situation, what is required, and to start strengthening these habits or virtuous ways of thinking, and these ways of thinking that will lead us to a state of liberation from uncontrolled rebirth in samsara. And so not only do we have this opportunity, but we have the physical basis to do this. We've attained a precious human rebirth, and we are using that precious human rebirth well. Now this opportunity that we have, this is very impermanent. It can end at any moment. We can say with no certainty that our situation today is the same as it will be tomorrow. Whatever health conditions we are sitting with now, we have no idea if they are going to be the same tomorrow or not. So now we are sitting here and we have the capacity to hear teachings. We have the capacity and the opportunity to meditate on those teachings, as well as engage in other virtuous activities such as helping others or maybe doing prostrations and the like. We have this opportunity, and this is something that we should all rejoice in, and I certainly rejoice in, that we all have this opportunity now, and that we should make the most of what we have now. And this afternoon we'll continue. We'll start with the presentation on the being of supreme capacity, so the fifth verse. And so, some questions. So, in the homage at the beginning, why is Manjushri referred to as a bodhisattva? So when one refers to Manjushri, there are two ways of speaking that one can refer. Maybe two ways one can refer to Manjushri. One is as a bodhisattva, and one can be as a Buddha. And so here, actually, both are included. So when we say the homage to the bodhisattva, the youthful Manjushri, this will also include the Manjushri as a Buddha. So the Manjushri who is practicing the path so as to attain the state of Buddhahood is the one, and the Manjushri who has attained the state of the Buddhahood is implied. It's not explicitly stated, but implied.
Jung
So what I explained there previously is a presentation that some people will give. Others won't quite agree with that, or put it differently, and they'll say Manjushri is always a Buddha and only a Buddha. And no matter how you refer to Manjushri, Manjushri remains a Buddha. And so this is my personal view, that when I would refer to Manjushri would be in the context of a Buddha.
Sāshī